This is the Aspen Public Radio Newscast. I'm your host, Megan Tackett. Here with your top stories this Monday. The Aspen School District will receive $5 million in state grant money to tap into underground energy. The Colorado Energy Office grant will help pay for ground source heat pumps that will provide heating and cooling to the district's three schools. Work began last November when the district drilled a test hole to determine whether the technology would be viable. Joe Wanica is the district's operations director and has been overseeing the effort.
We have the support of the school board. They've, with our recent bond, they're going to allocate about $10 million to air quality and conditioning.
The final project cost is still being determined, but Wanica says it's in the ballpark of $30 million. Federal tax credits will cover up to 40% of that, and Wanica hopes the remainder can be covered with the state grant, along with a contract with the project developer. Before any of that happens, the district has to finish drilling a test hole this summer. If all goes well, the project could break ground next spring. Over the weekend, Mountain Rescue Aspen responded to two backcountry skier emergencies in the high country. On Sunday, crews were dispatched to the Lindley Hut area after a skier suffered a knee injury. Members already in the field reached the party quickly, assisting as they began to self-extricate. The patient was transported by emergency sled, with all rescuers out by mid-afternoon. That was just one day after a separate incident near Mace Peak prompted a helicopter evacuation. Rescuers used a sled to move the injured skier to a landing zone where Flight for Life transported them to Aspen Valley Health. Crews cleared the scene just after 1 p.m. Officials remind backcountry users to be prepared and cautious as conditions change. In arts and culture news, this year marks the 19th anniversary of Carbondale's Five Point Film Festival and the first year for its new executive director. As Aspen Public Radio, Sarah Torrey reports, her goal is to help more women break into the adventure filmmaking space.
Aisha Weinhold grew up in Carbondale. She first went to Five Point in 2008 with her mom. One of the films she saw was called Deer and Yonder.
It's about women and their relationship with the ocean, and there's surfers and sailors. And it was the first time I'd ever seen an adventure film with women in it, and it totally blew up in my entire world.
Weinhold later started the No Man's Land Film Festival to showcase films made exclusively by women and genderqueer filmmakers. But it took a while to gain traction.
I would go to brands and they would truly would say, no one wants to watch that. Nobody wants to watch a woman do something. It won't be good. Their level of athleticism won't be enough.
Weinhold stepped down from running No Man's Land in 2019. She says that festival helped create a change in the industry as more brands started investing in broader gender representation. Now she hopes the same for Five Point. Weinhold says half of the films screening at this year's Five Point feature female directors and producers. For Aspen Public Radio, I'm Sarah Torrey.
The Five Point Film Festival runs April 21st to 26th in Carbondale. Seven places in Southern Colorado are in the spotlight at a new History Colorado exhibit. KRCC's Shauna Lewis reports.
From the San Luis Valley to the Eastern Plains, communities around the state are identifying places important to their history. Damian Pachota of History Colorado says it's part of a new approach in documenting the roles buildings and landscapes play in the state's story.
We want to make time for people because for a long time, preservation was removed from people and felt standoffish or even rejected people outright.
The exhibit is titled Keeping Place, Colorado Heritage for All. It's part of a project aimed at adding 150 new sites significant to underrepresented communities to the State Historic Register by the end of 2026. Shauna Lewis, KRCC News.
In statewide news, farm workers could lose some overtime wage protections under a bipartisan proposal that is headed to the governor's desk. The bill narrowly passed in the House after hours of debate. Ray Solomon reports for the Colorado Capital News Alliance.
Under current Colorado law, overtime for farm workers kicks in after 48 or 56 hours a week, depending on the work. The bill would bump up the overtime threshold to 56 hours for all ag workers. Most other hourly workers earn overtime after 40 hours a week. Many progressive Democrats, like Representative Elizabeth Velasco, opposed the change and said ag workers should have the same protections as everyone else.
A 40-hour work week was established to signal to employers that working any more than that comes at a detriment to the workers' health and safety. And if a worker is to work over 40 hours a week, then they must be compensated fairly for the risk associated with that.
Bill backers say the highly seasonal nature of agriculture justifies a higher overtime threshold.
That was Ray Solomon reporting for the Colorado Capital News Alliance. Colorado lawmakers struck down a bill that would have made it clear that cities and towns can set noise limits within their borders. For the Colorado Capital News Alliance, Benta Berkland has more.
The bipartisan bill sailed through the Senate and failed in its first House committee. The impact is statewide, but the debate focused almost entirely on the Ford Amphitheater in Colorado Springs. The city allowed the amphitheater to have a higher noise limit, but neighbors say it's disruptive and harmful. Democratic Representative Jamie Jackson was sympathetic to the residents.
Everyone deserves rest, safety, and stability where they live.
Backers of the bill say Colorado will now be left with perhaps the most aggressive statewide noise limits in the country. They worry it could derail festivals and music events that are critical throughout the state.
That was Benta Berkland for the Colorado Capital News Alliance. A new poll shows Colorado voters support bans on social media for kids and bans on cell phones in the classroom. CPR Education reporter Jenny Brundine has more.
More than 70% of voters back banning children under the age of 16 from social media platforms. Nearly 80% back banning cell phones in classrooms. The worry cuts across party lines. By a 40% margin, voters say new data centers bring more downsides than benefits, specifically citing water scarcity. Younger Coloradans are most familiar with data centers and most concerned about expanding them. Still, Coloradans are using artificial intelligence more than ever. Usage is up 15 points since November. Jenny Brundine, CPR News.
And in regional news, a first-of-its-kind facility to test nuclear microreactors is ready for business. The Mountain West News Bureau's Hannah Birdsbach has more on the Dome at Idaho National Lab.
There's no place like Dome. That was the subject line of a Department of Energy email blast in early April. It was announcing the completion of a 100-foot metal and cement dome located in the eastern Idaho High Desert.
It's a permanent test bed where we can bring in different reactors sequentially.
Brad Tomer out of Idaho National Lab says it's expensive and takes a lot of time for private companies to build their own test beds. The goal of the Dome is to take that factor out of the equation. California-based Radiant Nuclear will test a portable microreactor, which it says could replace diesel generators in remote villages or provide backup power at hospitals or data centers. It's one of several companies trying to start testing their reactors by July 4th, a deadline from the Trump administration. It's fast-tracking licensing to usher in what it hopes will be a nuclear renaissance. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Hannah Mersbach.
The chief of the U.S. Forest Service is defending a sweeping plan to restructure the agency. But as the Mountain West News Bureau's Rachel Cohen reports, concerns remain.
Chief Tom Schultz testified in front of a congressional subcommittee about next year's budget, but he spent a good portion of the time answering questions about the big reorganization his agency announced last month. Schultz says the goal is not to push staff out, but to be prudent with taxpayer dollars.
One of our facilities has no people in it, the plumbing doesn't work, and people saw it on a list, and oh my gosh, the facility's going to close, yet there's no employees even in that facility.
Schultz says about 500 Forest Service staff, about 1.5% of the workforce, would have to relocate under the plan, which will move the Washington headquarters to Salt Lake City. Some lawmakers said they didn't have enough information about the plan, including closures of research facilities and regional offices. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Rachel Cohen.
The Aspen Public Radio newscast is produced by our team. News Director Hallie Zander, reporters Reagan Mertz, Sarah Torrey, Michael Finelli, Sage Smiley, and me, your host, Megan Tackett. Our contributing reporters include Eleanor Bennett and Lucy Peterson. You can listen to the show every weekday morning on our website or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.